Hello and welcome to another special edition of the Offside Museums podcast. My name is Oke Ndibe, and it's my delight to welcome you on behalf of my co-host Emeka Onyagwa. In today's episode, we're going to be looking at continuing fallouts from the 2023 general elections, especially the presidential elections. We're going to x-ray the EU's take on the elections, as well as sort of how things are going in court. We're also going to look at Bola Tinubu's first outing at an international gathering of leaders in Paris, France. So we welcome you and we're excited. So, you know, so I think the first place to start naturally, I think, will be the report that the EU just issued, where they express grave misgivings about aspects of the conduct of the 2023 elections, particularly the fact, as I said, that INEC did not conduct that election in a way that would inspire public confidence and a kind of acceptability of the outcome of that election because of the absence of polling unit release of the results in so many polling units, and of course the alleged glitches that basically occurred and have ultimately undermined the uploads of the results of the presidential elections as they should have happened. We have paid attention to this development in several episodes so far. It's interesting that the EU has pointed to this lapse. And you can see that even in the overwhelmingly negative report that they offered, that they are still struggling mightily to be, as it were, polite to Nigeria. So the EU stopped short of saying to INEC, you basically threw this election, you rigged this election. And I think that, you know, the case is going on in court. The presidential electoral petition is in court. The two plaintiffs, the Labour Party and the PDP, the two at least major plaintiffs, have essentially closed their cases. Okay. So in the next week or so, when the case reopens, we're going to be hearing from INEC and the APC and Bola Ahmed Tinubu to see how they justify the victory that was called for Tinubu as the president-elect and ultimately Nigeria's putative president. I think that the way that the European Union has called this, it should be sobering for all Nigerians, okay? Because the European Union sent observers to the elections. Those observers pretty much were able to circulate only in certain urban areas that were well policed. Much of the rigging and much of the hanky-panky that occurred in that election occurred outside of the purview of electoral observers, especially international electoral observers. But even so, the EU was able to remark on the substantial inability. And I will not say it was inability, I think it's substantial unwillingness of INEC officials to play the rules as the Electoral Act suggests that they should play it. Not just suggests, but in fact stipulates that they should play it. It's interesting. I was looking at the response of the INEC spokesman. A really what I would call shameless response by Festus Okoye, who is the spokesman for INEC, and I'm going to read a little bit. INEC spokesman Festus Okoye said it is not true that political parties did not have primary evidence of the election results from the polling units. INEC National Commissioner Festus Okoye responded to the European Union Election Observation Mission's final report on the 2023 general elections. He cautioned against judging the entire performance of the Electoral Commission based on a glitch in the result upload for the presidential election. Okoye highlighted that political parties had primary evidence of the results from the polling units through their nominated and accredited polling agents. Well, you know what? In a lot of cases, that was true. And so the case that is before the tribunal now is essentially that those polling unit results that party agents obtained in so many different units did not reflect the total votes that were ultimately announced. In other words, that INEC in many cases handed the real results in polling units, but went ahead and rigged the election for the ruling party. So I think, as I said in the last podcast, that Obi's lawyers, and to some extent, Atiku's lawyers, the lawyers for the PDP presidential candidate, Atiku, have so far presented devastating evidence of massive fraud and corruption by INEC and ultimately by the APC and the president-elect, we must assume. During cross-examination by the defense attorneys representing the respondents, whether it's INEC or the APC or Tinubu, remarkably, there was very little dent made in the cases presented either by experts in cybersecurity or results that reflected the outcome of polling unit outcomes that were ultimately given to political party representatives but did not reflect what was announced in Abuja. So, so that's my opening take on the EU final report and on INEC's response. I think that the EU's report is compelling. I think that it coincides with the sense of any Nigerian who monitored that election, that, you know, things, there were huge gaps in performance. And of course, INEC, in their response, seemed to insist that we're going to have our heads in the sand and we're just going to play dumb. I don't know what your take is.
Yeah. There's that famous saying, which, you know, some people don't like, you know, for those who don't know, I actually engage in more difficult thoughts and conversations. So my background, part of my background is history and philosophy. So, but this thought is, I'm just saying this, this thought is, if you want to hide something from a black person, put it in a book. Obviously, not every black person, obviously.
Yes.
But there is validity to it. Just like when you wonder why the vast majority of black countries have problems. It's not inherent. It's not inherent. Doesn't mean because you're black that you're going to go one way or the other. No, it's not that. It's a lot of social cultural part of it is the way colonization worked out for some people and the people who ended up actually implementing colonization. But that's a whole different conversation. The EU just sat down and said, in the way Nigerians would love, because it means nothing. to the Nigerians by and large, from top to bottom. If you doubt me, you open and Google and listen to the analysis on the majority of this thing, of Nigerian news sources, the EU and even the American Mission Observers, where you had American politicians like Stacey Abrams and co, categorically, as emphatically, outside of Donald Trump, said, outside of Trump-like people, well, you know, let me not say Trump-like people, but you get people get the gist. There was no elections. It doesn't exist. It didn't exist. You can go and compare it with their previous reports. This was worse than Yar'Adua's election back in 2006, I believe, or seven. This was worse than that one. They categorically said that there's no elections, as politely as these guys can put it. So, you know, most people would, like I said, it's the perfect way of putting it to a Nigerian crowd on the Nigerian media and people that cover it, because it means absolutely nothing. It's business as usual. In fact, I watch a whole bunch of people who, I need to call their names, content creators or all that. They have Instagram lives, they have YouTube lives, all that. And even when you bring it up, when they bring on guests on their YouTube lives or Instagram lives, and the guests try to make sense, not do it the Nigerian. The Nigerian way is typically violence. That's what it's violence spelled with the V-A-W. That's a different Nigerian way entirely. You can Google that or tweet that. But even when you go to these guys and you explain it and they know they can't get out of the corner, they either get angry or they tell you, well, all elections in Nigeria are like that. Which, you know, to some degree, it is right. All elections globally have some level of
controversy.
Yes, it's not a lie, but the question is, to what extent? People talk about the 64 elections in Nigeria being something like this. I say, based on everything I've studied and everything I've read, this thing's the Yar'Adua one, this thing is just to a whole different level. It's just at this point in time.
But let me just interrupt you. Let's even assume that the 1964 elections were this way, right? Isn't it a shame that 50 years later, almost 50 years later, Nigerians will be saying the elections we did 50 years after the flawed elections of the 1960s were just like the 1960s. So, you know, it's sort of the argument that some of our people make when you point to the absence of public investment by governments, meaningful investment in infrastructure, right? And some Nigerians will say, oh, you can't be too much in a hurry. Rome was not built in a day. You know, so they throw out these silly, really ignorant sayings without knowing what it says about them, right? So I said to them, if the metaphoric Rome was not built in a day, that it took maybe decades and centuries, maybe even more than a century to build Rome, the template is already there, right? So if you are insisting on spending as many years as it took to build the original Rome, then you are mentally, there's something mentally wrong with you.
So we should not be boasting
that our elections of 2023 were just as bad as those of the, you know, one held in the 1960s. You know, if that's where we are, then we've actually it's called exponential regression.
Yeah. So somebody making that defense that it's always been like that is just, and you know, they're unabashed about it. They don't care. Like some of these people have, even maybe by birth, they have passports from other countries, so they get to travel, even though they live in Nigeria. Some of them travel, they go to other places, yes. They see, the point of saying they travel is not to just say that, oh, you know, they see that this is not all there is. That's the point. Yeah, actually, you actually go to other places. And I remember when a relative came to visit, and there's a difference when you go to another country and you've lived in Nigeria, or you live in Nigeria. Everybody has their own cup of tea. Some people go to Nigeria for different reasons, but there's a difference when you're now used to living in Nigeria and you go to another country. And they came in, and we had ordered wine, which I always actually I need to even check my latest case that is supposed to come in, and the wine came in. I'm a little bit of a wine, well, not a little bit. I'm very deep into wine and all that. So wine came in, and the cases were just at the front door. And I was busy. I didn't have time to go stock the wine properly. And person is in a panic, like, huh? Won't you? Don't take the wine. I'm like, nobody's taking it. Yeah, or somebody might come into the house and start drinking the wine. Like, this. So there is that. You'd see something else. It's a different, and even when these people on Nigerian media, I mean, some of them talk very well. Thank God for somebody like Dele Farotimi and people like that, right? They go in and talk very well. But the majority of these people go back and dig deeper trenches. They defend the system. Some people would term it Stockholm syndrome, or somewhere in that distance. So if you go in and you take a look at all these things, you see people defending it, people are not talking about it. It's just, it is sadly part of the fabric, is part of the nobody's talking about it. These guys actually went to INEC, shook them, presented the distance. From all accounts, from everything I was taking a look at, because there are a whole bunch of phenomenal, I don't know if they are data scientists or data enthusiasts or data, probably data scientists of some levels, a lot of them, because they have at least some data to work with. So a lot of them are monitoring these things, but some of them physically, a lot of them actually overseas, America, UK, so many other countries. And as of today, INEC is beginning to change some of the results on the portals. So the big one was Abuja, right? So everybody talked about 25, you needed 25% in Abuja, the Federal Capital Territory, to win. Now, I'm not talking about the legal aspect of it. I'm just talking about the public debate based on the law. So apparently, since they presented that result, the report,
announced,
right?
yeah.
They went to present the report. INEC has been slowly altering, especially with the court cases, which we'll talk about as well. They've been slowly altering, which you can go to the portal and take a look at it for yourself. Tinubu's result. So it has been coming up. I think it came up from 18%, and now it's about 23%. So all the while, by the way, based on what is in court, they threw away most of the results, especially in the FCT. So they are claiming that they don't even have the majority of the results in the FCT, but they declared the winner. And not just the FCT, a lot of states, they're blank distance, which we'll get into as well. But that's the reality of the reports. Like, it is the most Nigerian thing. Stacey Abrams, all these people come out. There's only so much they are going to talk about in front of they've given their reports. It's literally saying, look, there's no elections. There was nothing. I mean, I think the good side to it, I wanted to add, just the good side to it is, anyway, I'll get to that. There was a Sierra Leonean thing I was going to talk about, but anyway, you can, but yeah, but that's the main thing about it. That's just what the report entails.
Yes.
At the end of the
So
day.
this is a segment from the EU report. It says the widely welcomed Electoral Act 2022 introduced measures aimed at building stakeholder trust. However, the Act's first test in a general election revealed crucial gaps in terms of INEC's accountability and transparency, proved to be insufficiently elaborated, and lacked clear provisions for timely and efficient implementation. Weak points include a lack of INEC independent structures and capacities to enforce sanctions for electoral offenses and breaches of campaign finance rules, and so on and so on. Then it says, furthermore, the presidential election of INEC leadership, the presidential selection of INEC leadership at the federal and state level leaves the electoral institution vulnerable to the perception of partiality. And once, I mean, so the thing is, the take of some Nigerians, and as I said, these are Oyibo people straining to be polite, you know, because of course they don't want to say you Africans are baboons, you are monkeys, the way you did this thing, you are idiots, right? Which, trust me, in their private spaces, this is what they must be. We're laughing stock, is what we are, right? So we waste every 4 years, we waste billions, okay, trying to do an election. And ultimately, what we do is a sham exercise, right? And so these people are trying to be very, very polite in their language, but it comes true still that this was not an election. This was not an election. And this was an election where the top leadership of INEC made all kinds of promises within Nigeria and outside of Nigeria that they were going to go by the rules. The system was impregnable to manipulation and so on and so forth. And we got a fairly good system. It's just that we have a system that is not proof against shamelessness, against just daylight robbery, which is what happened in case after case after case. And so you look at the problem that the European Union highlighted, that in a lot of polling booths, party agents did not have access to the results, right? And then the results were not uploaded in the way that the Electoral Act stipulates that they should be. And then a lot of the parties then approached the electoral tribunals, right, for review of the results. And INEC is subpoenaed to produce documents. These are documents on the basis of which INEC announced the ostensible results. And so INEC will come to court and make excuses. Oh, we brought 2 out of 10 documents we are supposed to bring. Okay. The next day there was, oh yeah, you know, this party did not pay for the printing of the thing, so we didn't bring it. Okay. And so on and so forth. So you see at every stage fraud, that fraud is writ large, because if you are confident in the elections that you announced, then you should have the documents. If anybody challenges you, you say, here are the documents, right? And the documents should match what obtained at polling units all over the country on election day, you know. But obviously, that is not the case. Well, you highlighted the issue of Nigerians. So for some Nigerians, you know, there is a zero-sum game, right? And it's also, as I say, politics has few principles other than the principle of victory, to have the V or the W, the win. And so some people are just celebrating the fact that the candidate who is their ethnic champion or their political, you know, who belongs to the party of their political leaning, won, or somebody who is of their religious persuasion, won. What these people don't understand, maybe they understand, I don't know, because this should be a lesson that should be clear to us, every Nigerian by now, is that if you support electoral impunity, if you support fraud, if you support the the stealing of elections. Essentially, what you're saying is that you have no investment in democracy. And at some point, you're going to be on the losing side. So if that is the way the game is played, at some point, your candidate is going to win and your candidate will be rigged out. And trust me, I don't think there's anybody whose candidate is rigged out of a deserved victory who says, oh, yeah, I applaud the person who stole my candidate's mandate, right? Because that's the way elections are supposed to be made. So that's one point. But the other point is that once we institute the ethos that elections can be stolen, then everything is up for grabs. Young people will go into exams, not preparing for the exams. They will give bribes. They will get good grades based on the amount of money they have to bribe. They're going to go to university. They're going to study medicine. They're going to bribe to become doctors. And they're going to treat you. And even those of us who are outside of the country, they're going to treat your loved ones. So you're going to hear that somebody died needlessly because they were treated by somebody who has embraced the idea that money should buy anything or that connection should buy anything, you see. And at any rate, when you have bad governance, it affects everybody. I don't think that there is an APC person who goes to the market and, you know, there's a certain price for fuel and you produce your APC card or you produce a cashier and you're a Muslim or you're a Yoruba person and they say, oh, you know what, we're going to knock off 200 naira from the price of fuel. No, every Nigerian ultimately suffers. But let's even assume that the person who is illicitly put in power becomes a genius of leadership, okay, begins to act in the public interest, which is an argument that some people are using. Oh, not so far, Tinubu is doing well. The thing is that if Tinubu is doing well so far, let's even assume that. Let's grant that for the sake of argument. You can't hold him to doing well throughout his term in office, right? He could be doing well now because the case is in court. He doesn't know what will happen. He wants to sort of arouse a certain kind of public response and sentiment. Once he's then pronounced to be the legitimate president, then his true colors as a president emerges, right? But even if he continues to do well for 4 years, the point is still that the body politic, the moral fiber of the country is already poisoned. When you tell young people, when you tell every Nigerian that you can steal the most sacred and important political office in the country, if you can steal that, then you can steal anything, you know. So even if Tinubu goes ahead and becomes Nigeria's Abraham Lincoln, okay, he will still remain a net adverse factor in Nigerian politics. He doesn't do much that is positive for Nigeria, ultimately.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, at the end of the day, you could beat that in so many ways, right? The main thing is to take a look at what is supposed to happen and what was supposed to happen. And that's the way a certain level of standards in life is always needed. Doesn't matter where you are. That's the natural evolution of humanity. And you would expect that the majority of humanity in this 2023 has evolved to have a certain level of standards. It's not a question of making boastful. You know, every group makes all kinds of claims about their lineage, most of which is nonsense. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. Nigeria is no different from European ethnic groups that all make all kinds of claims. You can make all kinds of boastful claims that maybe you went to school, your group people went to, whatever. This is all hocus pocus generally. But at the core, what you need is standards in life. So, and that's the main thing. You want standards of some sort. What kind of country that you do? You have a country? How do you select your leaders? All those kind of things. So, anyway, that's just the moral of the distance. If you don't believe in standards and you believe in the wild, wild west, then let's have the wild, wild west. You know, everybody should just get a gun and let's chase ourselves around and see who wins, right? So, I'm all for it.
Yeah. talking about standards, right? Which is perhaps another way of talking about best practices, right? So elections were held in Kenya last year. There were petitions for judicial review of the result of those elections. Those reviews, judicial reviews, were carried out in a very transparent, in a very public, indeed in a televised format. Okay. Same thing happened in Ghana. And so I was speaking to a major Nigerian politician a few days ago, and we were discussing this same question. And the question, the issue then became, why is it that in the case of Nigeria, in an election where so much was at stake, where the very, Nigerians under Buhari, President Muhammad Buhari, had come to a place of despair, both about democracy itself, but also about the direction, policy directions of the country, with attacks that escalated, sectarian attacks, with corruption on an unprecedented scale in an administration that had staked out its claim to being to having excellent credentials in fighting corruption, with just the exacerbation of violence on every scale, you know, by the Islamic ISIS in West Africa, by Boko Haram, and so on and so forth, by herdsmen. So Buhari had brought the Nigerian polity to a pass where, for a lot of people, the 2023 elections had to do with the very question of whether Nigeria will continue to have a future as one corporate unit. That's what, in a sense, was at stake. So it was an election in which everybody needed to bring their best practices, beginning with INEC, beginning with the security agencies, with the political parties and candidates, and the way that they conducted themselves. In all of this, the elections then fail on a massive scale, you know, especially the presidential elections failed on a massive scale. So there's a lot of issues that are being canvassed before the election petition, the election tribunals, right? And especially in the presidential elections. So I think that it's a betrayal of Nigerians and the betrayal of the principles of civil liberty, of political, democratic transparency and accountability, that our judges, the judges hearing these petitions, chose to hear them, not in the most open of forums, not televised, but to hear them in a sense secretly. Of course, Nigerians get snippets from different media organizations about what transpired every day in the tribunals. But it would have given great fillip, great hope to Nigerians if they were able to see the entire process, so that at the end of the day, whatever verdict the tribunal came to, in a sense that the public will have the confidence that that verdict reflected what transpired during the hearings, right? And it has nothing to do with whether one candidate or another candidate triumphs, whether Peter Obi's petition succeeds and, you know, they announce him as the appropriate president-elect, or Tinubu is ultimately affirmed as a president, or Atiku, or there is a call for supplementary elections, or a call for the cancellation of elections, whatever the verdict, the ultimate verdict is. If Nigerians feel that something has happened outside of their purview, that the process has been hidden from them, then already, again, we have failed in what was a great opportunity to... And so it's interesting, by the way, that INEC and the APC and Tinubu, the ostensible winners and organizers of this election that they want to tell us was in compliance with the Electoral Commission, that they all teamed up to insist that they did not want a televised election. So you say, what are they hiding? Because if I were the INEC leader and I was sure that I called the correct election, I would ask for CNN or the BBC to come and beam the hearings so that they can see us acquit ourselves and earn our image back from those who are traducing our image. But so these are the ones who say, yeah, we acted correctly, but we don't want the public to see us struggle or to see us triumph in upholding that self-image. So
yeah, well, so I mean, now we're talking about the we moved on to the outcome, so the tribunals, yeah. The tribunals and all that. First thing I'd say is the one good one, the positive thing of one of the positive things of this week was the Sierra Leonean elections happened. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether to laugh or, you know, send out letters and emails warning the countries when I see Nigerian officials going to monitor the elections. I'm like, look, man, you need to get these guys out of your country.
Oh,
man.
My gosh.
So I saw Jonathan. I was like, why are you going? Where are you going to, man? You're going to
what
monitor
are your
what?
Credentials for monitoring anything?
You monitoring, man. So, you know, I saw them go there. They you know, did their charades and all that. And the Sierra Leoneans who... very cerebral people. A lot of my good friends as Sierra Leoneans, like my high school, secondary school teacher, we just lost Sierra Leonean. Great people, man. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. A lot calmer, a lot more reflective, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. There was a video I don't want to... There was a traveler who sent out a video, differences between Nigeria and Ghana. Mm-hmm. Great one on this thing. Anyway, so... people were not happy with the elections. Obviously, and people aren't typically not always happy with elections. Question is to what degree? Mm-hmm. And in some cases, like in the case of Nigeria, was there even any election really? So there's nothing to be... there was an event, but it wasn't an election in the case of Nigeria. But so, you know, they showed certain things. The people showed, even the organization was way better. The basic stuff, just printing papers, pictures... there are things here and there. I have a couple of people I've worked with and friends who are Sierra Leoneans who actually live here and went there to vote or went there to be part of the movement, right? So I followed them on social media because they're friends to some degree, right? So You know, people had complaints here and there. Nothing compared to Nigeria. And the electoral commissioner came out and said, hey, if you guys are not happy, look at what happened in Nigeria. Look at Peter Obi.
Yeah.
Specifically, that was a bright spot. He's saying, mm-hmm. look at Peter Obi. And I'd said this all through when people keep on insulting the Obi distance. I said, look, you can't control your support. You can barely even, in some mm-hmm. people can barely even control their own families, much less mm-hmm. supporters, right? So you can't control what people do. Your biggest control maybe is your family. Maybe it's people around you to some degree. You can't control that. But to use that in the Nigerian fashion, the violence fashion, and say it was Peter Obi, I'm like, you're just being very unfair is the kindest thing I'll say to that person, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. obviously a lot of them were beyond unfair. But you see other countries looking by, it's like, they're not even saying, hey, go to court like Kenya. No, they're like, hey, look, see what happened in Nigeria. See, Peter mm-hmm. Obi could have ignited mm-hmm. his supporters, and mm-hmm. God knows where we would be today if he had done that.
Yeah.
But he chose the path which he has from day one campaigned on. You know, he cares about where Nigeria goes to.
Mm-hmm.
He believes in Nigeria, has one passport, you know, all that stuff. He's traveled around the world, all that good stuff. And go to court, follow the distance. And that was a bright spot about it. That was a good spot to see, mm-hmm. like, okay, hey, look, even other countries that are consuming all these things from Nigeria, are sitting down. Mind you, Sierra Leone has a massive both religious divide, cultural divide.
Class divide.
You have mm-hmm. all these divides of different kinds. You have, just like you have in Liberia, same thing with Sierra Leone. Uh-huh. I've forgotten what they're called in Sierra Leone. The transplants. We don't really uh-huh. call them as much in Nigeria uh-huh. Because the transplants, I mean, by the way, are not modern day transplants.
Sierra Leone
is a country that was created by the British to deal with the aftermath, essentially dealing with the aftermath first of the Revolutionary War,
uh-huh.
and then eventually their own abolition of slave trading. Before slavery, but slave trading. Mm-hmm. So it's a country that was created. Same thing with Liberia, was also created to deal with the aftermath of both the American mm-hmm. Revolutionary War and the American Civil War. Mm-hmm. So in Liberia, you have a group which, to some degree, you call them an ethnic congregation. They are called the Americos. Sierra Leone, I've forgotten what they're called, but they are, you know, they have all these divides. That's the point. You have even those kind of profound divides. Muslims, you've had Muslims rule, you've had Christians rule, Tijan Kaba, I remember mm-hmm. growing up, all this kind mm-hmm. of people, right? So, and they're like, look, go to court. And, mm-hmm. you know, look at what happened with Peter Obi.
Mm-hmm.
So it's somebody, people sitting down from the outside are using that. They're not even talking about Kenya. And mm-hmm. they're like, look, mm-hmm. even in be nice to Nigeria, even mm-hmm. in a terrible place like Nigeria, and I'm being nice. Mm-hmm. Like, look at how Peter Obi conducted himself.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying, right?
Yeah.
So that's the good part. And when you get to the tribunals and you look at the what's going on, the cases, and I don't know how it ends up.
My point is that even if, let's say, Peter Obi wins in court and the court, in the best case scenario, declares that he won the elections, or the court decide, okay, he didn't quite win. He came the closest to winning, because I believe from everything that Obi had the most votes, most likely, so that it was absurd to place him at third. But let's say that he had the most votes, but he did not meet the threshold somehow for victory, right? So the tribunal could say, okay, you go for another election. I actually think that if there is another election, that Obi is likely not to do well, you know, principally because the pool of his supporters, ethnicity and sectarian sentiments have poisoned that pool. You know, so some people now feel that there is a war between Igbo people and Yoruba people. There is a war between Muslims and Christians and so on, Catholics and Pentecostals, you know, which is a sort of divisions or divisiveness that Nigeria is a genius at trumping and trumpeting up. But what I'm saying is that even if Obi wins, right, there are Tinubu supporters who now feel, yeah, Obi must have, you know, somebody must hate Tinubu because he's a Muslim or he's a Yoruba man, and they went and they want to push him out, right? But if the hearings were out in the open, because the tribunals, hopefully, if they are sworn to the defense of the law, then they should have no fears, okay? People will see the evidence. And the truth is that we have to give ordinary people more credit than they usually get. Even though people are not lawyers, when they look at proceedings in a courtroom over several days, over several weeks, they can have a sense of which party is making a compelling case and which is making a weak case, right? It struck me that many of the witnesses that have testified for either the PDP or the Labour Party, that the defendants have had to resort to very sort of tangential technical questions. You know, so there was this cybersecurity guy who testified for the Labour Party, and Tinubu's lawyer was asking, oh, you know, who is the boss of your agencies? Did your boss give you permission to come? And so on and so forth. So, I mean, you already see this is a lawyer who is struggling, you know, because you cannot impugn the evidence that this person has presented. And so you resort to technicalities. Did your boss write you a letter? Did he approve your presence here through a secular or by, you know, verbal means and so on? So that's one, the loss already, that whoever emerges victorious, and let us say that somehow, let's say that Tinubu is affirmed, which a lot of people think that that's the way these cases go in Nigeria. That whatever happens, even when there is abundant merit to the petitions, that the Nigerian judiciary has never had the spine. And I really hope that at some point they develop that spine, they grow the spine, right? To remove an illegitimate government at the federal level. They've done that at the state level. And I think that will be was either the first case or one of the first cases where when they removed Ngige, right, in Anambra State.
It was the first case.
Yeah. So, and before then, it was almost like once you rigged yourself in, it became a fait accompli, first of all, because you had all these resources of the state at your disposal, and so you can buy the best lawyers, and if it came to bribing, you could offer the most handsome bribes, right, to panels of judges and so on. Now, we have never had a federal election, a presidential election invalidated by the courts. But this one was so egregious, so blatant, so flagrant that, and there have been very bad ones in the past, but this one particularly, I think, crossed a line. So that if the panel were to ignore all of that and just say, we're going to affirm Tinubu as president, I think that you are going to see one of two things. It's either that future elections will be more violent because everybody knows that whatever we do, once we get in there, basically we'll coast to 4 years, right? So it will either be more violent instigated by the candidates to intimidate their opponents and win, or there will be instant recourse to violence by losing candidates would instigate violence, because they know if we go to court, there's not going to be a recourse, right? And part of what happens in Nigeria is sort of there's this Igbo proverb which says, Alu gbara obulo menani. So in other words, if you do something that is deeply evil, but it's let to simmer for a year, it becomes part of the custom, part of the tradition of a people. People get accustomed to this is the way we do business, right? So what we're going to see, right? I will suggest what we're going to see is that if Tinubu is affirmed as a president, which is a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, it will be disruptive if you remove somebody who has removed service chiefs, appointed new service chiefs, renamed airports and so on and so forth, remove fuel subsidies. So are all those actions going to be reversed if you bring in another president? But so there is a solution, and that solution, I think, is to have the elections in Nigeria much earlier so that we resolve the question of any questions about electoral disputes must be resolved before a new president is installed. And in the case that the courts do not reach that resolution, that there should be some kind of caretaker committee that should take office. Maybe holdovers from the previous parliament, whether the Senate president, the Speaker of the House, could jointly hold the presidency as president and vice president until all the cases are disposed of. It doesn't make sense that somebody who is accused of winning an office illegitimately is installed there as president. And then, you know, cases are ongoing in court. Because as president, he can give instructions. If INEC is asked to show up in court, he can give instructions, don't show up. You know, I'm going to sign a paper for you that you are sick, you've been flown abroad for a major somebody who is supposed to be a witness and so on. So there are all kinds of damage that somebody is capable of making once you install them as president.
Yeah, so with the tribunals, right? It's just simply a case of you're talking of having confidence in the process. It should be televised. I mean, that would be great. The trouble with that thought process in itself is you have a lot of court cases, tribunals, which this tribunal has a direct appeal, I believe, to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of court cases and tribunals like this, similar to this worldwide, which are not televised, which is fine. The differences in these countries, like in America, for instance, is not televised still till tomorrow. It's sketched, is recorded. The transcripts are released, and judgments typically are the legal doctrines are put forth for people to read if they want. The difference is historically people have built up these institutions. Mm-hmm. In Nigeria, it's a different case. It's not that it's not being built up. There is no confidence in the judiciary whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know, this conversation of people will do tomorrow. Nigeria is already and has been for a while a cash and carry political country, which is why Tinubu ran for office, right? So if not in a country that has any modicum of this thing, Tinubu would not
be a candidate.
Period. It wouldn't run for anything. But like people will talk about people in the past. I'm like, you know, it's amazing that Igbos, for instance, voted for Obasanjo 8 years. And maybe you have some Yoruba gatekeepers who think that Obasanjo is not a Yoruba person. I don't know. Igbos have supported all kinds of people. Even Awolowo did well in the East in 83 elections, right? Even with Zeke on the ballot, he did decently. Yeah. He didn't win the East, but he did well. Go check the results.
I mean, when Ojukwu was on the ballot, he lost. You know,
Ojukwu himself lost on the ballot. So, you know, so if you have all the, you've been at a point. It's absolutely at a point where it's cash and carry. The elections were bought outright with money, and that's the amount varies based on one. Anybody that's arguing, you go and see the primaries. You go and see how much was paid. You hear how much was paid even for the House of Reps elections, Senate elections. According to this thing, what Takuma Bio paid each senator like $350,000 or somewhere, according to some reports. I don't know what the exact figure is. I'm not endorsing any figure. It's just reality that it was outright, they were outright payments. Yes. And it's a different comparative in politics where there is a level of corruption where maybe in America, there's a give and take of some sort. You get in there and you're sponsored by certain people. It's not this. It is not like conversations we have in America in terms of, we are sponsored by this, or there's the appearance of corruption, which, you know, there are give and takes everywhere. The difference where you just carry, like in the case of Jefferson, when Congressman Jefferson at the time, when Atiku gave him money, the American media said they found cold hard cash, literally found cold hard cash in his fridge. Yeah. In his fridge, this is what happens in Nigeria. You buy everybody out. Some figures said INEC chairman, that's the Electoral Commission chairman, was given like $180 million. So. At the end of the day,
we don't know that for a fact, but you know that
some figures. So, again, yeah, I don't know. I will sit down and 100% say, obviously, a large amount of money. That kind of money definitely exchange hands for sure. Well, I don't know the exact figure. I was not part of it. I'm not privy to it.
What I'm willing to say is that there's a lot of corruption in our country. We don't know that this guy got money. You know.
Based on the way he conducted the election. There were recordings which were authenticated that there were conversations on how much he should get. But it's not even, you already know what happened.
I mean, people, you know, make out like bandits in these situations, you know. The way that Yakubu conducted the elections. You have to have zero respect for your name, for your legacy, to put your name behind this kind of election and to announce it the way he did, right? But having said so, if again we inhabit a world where people demand proof. So all I'm saying is that if somebody says to us, okay, show proof, right? We have no proof. But all we can say is that it doesn't pass the smell test. You have to hate your name and yourself so much to call the kind of election that he did. So
yeah, in a decent country, if somebody says show proof, based on what people have brought out, based on the recordings, based on the information, based on everything, in any half-working country, there would have been a serious investigation.
Or in any half-working country,
I'm not even talking of America. Yeah. I'm talking of countries that you might not even, small countries here and there. So there's enough for a full-scale investigation. When people, the mischievous people that will say show proof, are trying to say, well, show a conviction. In Nigeria, there will not be an investigation.
There will not be a conviction. Yeah.
Neither of those two things will happen.
Yeah.
But there's it's like
all of us were there when the PDP and the APC conducted their primaries. We know that it was a cash and carry scandalous cash and carry boon for party delegates that people were giving $15,000 or more to cast one vote. And that's some issue that ultimately we have to resolve in our electoral system. Because no man spends $15,000. No man even will spend $1,000 per delegate to win an election, to win a nomination in order to become president and work for the country. Any man who is digging, putting a hand in his pocket, even for money that he has stolen from the Nigerian people, but he's bringing out that money to bribe people to give him the nomination, that man is going there ultimately to steal some more, okay? And we, until we clean up the system, we're going to be governed, ruled is more like it, we're going to be ruled by certified criminals, you know? Which is why, I mean, we didn't even, haven't talked about the proposal to increase the salaries of serving, top serving political officials in Nigeria. That's another, I mean, it riles you. It actually makes you angry. It's like at every turn, Nigerians have been taken for fools. You know, let me not get there. Let me not get there because I will want us to spend a few minutes sort of talking about Mr. Tinubu's outing at the Global Financing Pact Summit in Paris. So, the presidency orchestrated this, Tinubu's participation in this, as his first official duty outside of Nigeria. Okay. There were reports by Sahara Reporters and a few other media organizations that this was actually an opportunity for Tinubu to see his foreign doctors, you know. Again, we're not sure of that. That's been reported there. I don't think I've seen denial by the government. But if this is true, then we better be used to this as a holding pattern, that Tinubu is going to spend a few weeks in Nigeria and a few weeks outside of Nigeria seeking medical help. You and I, in the long run up to the 2023 elections, had constantly said that the business of running a country like Nigeria, which is in a congenital condition of failure, should not fall to somebody who is hampered by severe medical crisis himself. But all of that is now a moot point. But to speak substantively of Tinubu's participation in this summit, at the main section of the summit, Tinubu was a no-show. And I think he sent the Nigerian ambassador to France to represent him. He showed up for a photo op, and even then there were so many miscues. He did not speak he didn't say anything to speak of. And so this is the first, so his first foreign mission, if you like, must be called what it was. A massive failure and embarrassment for Nigeria. It continues the pattern of Buhari, who went to international fora, whether the United Nations or elsewhere, and was a kind of forgettable figure, you know, perhaps because nobody respected him. Because of his absence of eloquence. So it's a shame of a nation. It's really a shame of a country like Nigeria with all the intellectual talent that the country has, that we are again and again led by people who are not taken seriously on the international stage, who look like rejects in the gathering of fellow presidents and heads of government.
Yeah. So, I mean, with that, if you watch, just like, well, you said, if you watch, Tinubu went to Paris, most likely to all kinds of reports, right? To go to see doctors in London, which he went to London afterwards. And by some people, it was partially orchestrated by the Chagori businessmen. Neither here nor there, you could go read all those reports. That's not even the distant. I implore people to read all those things and listen to any of the evidences or anything like that. Make up your own minds. He goes there, and a lot of the Nigerian media see it as a successful outing. Yeah. People defended the fact that he didn't speak on any panels, that you don't need to speak on panels. You know, people, I believe Arise News is one of the biggest TV stations in Nigeria. They defended all that. People like Ruben Abatsi specifically defended that. And a host of other people out there, go Google it yourself, check it out. Most of the Nigerian media defended it. Why should he talk on the panel? Didn't have this person or other heads of, in fact, they told us that the other heads of states didn't talk in the panels, but the evidence came out that they did, obviously, and they spoke very well. Ruto, who was elected recently from Kenya, spoke very well. South African president spoke very well as well. A whole bunch of people. But, you know, you didn't elect a guy that speaks very well. He didn't come to the campaign and speak very well. So you don't expect, that was not what you elected, right? So that's neither here nor there. So you have a whole bunch of these guys who are talking about it as a great in the Nigerian media. And they were more fixated with other things, like Okonjo-Iweala didn't post a picture with Tinubu. And that one particularly on the other side really annoyed me, because people started insinuating that Okonjo-Iweala got her position with the support of the Nigerian government, with the support of the APC government, which is not how you get the WTO position. If the Nigerian government was supporting you to get the WTO position, you would have more Nigerians in the WTO. You would have had more Nigerians contesting for the WTO. The reality is America, just basic, I don't even need to get into how the world works in terms of trade. But America, the WTO is America's baby. It is America's baby. You're not getting there without America's approval. That's you don't right. typically put Americans there, but they typically put American-aligned people. So if you go back and... And there was a lady that distant had to just tweet at her, like, please, don't say all these things, right? Don't say, Okonjo-Iweala became a U.S. citizen in 2019. If she wasn't a U.S. citizen, she would not be WTO. She's operating on a different level. All her, she wouldn't be W. If she was solely a Nigerian citizen, she would not be WTO, Dr. Redder. There is no chance, no way in hell. You need a certain kind of alignment. The other lady too, that the South Korean lady that was a finalist with her as well, also had a deep American background and is also a naturalized American as well. You go back to a lot of these people, they have a deep American alliance. America is not letting you run global trade. America is not letting you run, be one of the biggest players in global trade if you're not aligned to their interest. If Buhari had opened his mouth to say anything, which he would never, ever support Okonjo-Iweala, he had opened his mouth to say anything, they would never have given her that position. Doesn't matter if it's Trump or Bill Clinton. So that's something that really icked me about that. They talked about, like, look, you guys are off. You need to go and figure yourselves out. This is not Nigeria. You don't get jobs in America the way you get jobs in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. Completely different. If what you think you about in Nigeria and how you get it has got no bearing on how you actually get a career in America. But that being said, you know, people talked about it, and they defended it. They talked, you know, they'll call it spin. The spin masters have spun it in Nigeria largely on the media. But the realities are there. I think if you take a look at it, I was pointing out to one group that I saw when they posted a video, and I saw people that went there to beg for debt forgiveness as usual. I saw some of them wearing Richard Mille watches. Richard Mille watch. It's not a cheap watch. You're talking of a watch. I think even at the low end, it's probably maybe the lowest end is maybe 15,000, 20,000. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them go over 20 million.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody.
$20 million.
Dollars.
Richard Mille. Do you mean $200,000?
No, I mean $20 million.
A wristwatch.
A wristwatch. So when somebody's looking at you wearing a Richard Mille watch, they're not going to look at you to... most of these people are government officials, and I've worked for the U.S. government. You don't go into any of the and see rich contractors, people that have multiple houses, multiple yachts. They don't come in to do business wearing these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Gates came to Nigeria the other day. Same thing. They don't wear it. Tony Elamulu was in Paris. Mm-hmm. He wasn't wearing. He could afford him. You know, mm-hmm. The way people, Okonjo-Iweala walks around in Ankara. I've mm-hmm. sat down on dinner tables with that woman multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
You know where, but Nigerian delegation, the Tinubu delegation had people in this picture, and nobody has time to find out if it's a 15,000 or the 40 million, 20. Floyd Mayweather has the $25 million one, the Richard Mille watch. You know, and he had the custom, one of them, I might go call the person's name, he had the custom blue one to match his native. I'm like, these guys, man, I am going there to beg. You're going there to beg for forgiveness.
Yes, like, look, man. Yes.
Okay, yeah, and most people didn't catch this thing. I'm like, well, I don't blame them because they're not in the watch world. Yeah, a few Nigerians are senior and they're in the watch world, but even those ones don't care. But you went there, you sat down and you say, yeah, world leaders wanted to talk with them. Tinubu, I don't know which world leaders, man. Maybe the cartel leaders. I don't know. Maybe the Medellin cartel leaders. But for most people, you don't. It just shows the conversation on Okonjo-Iweala, the conversation on going to beg for debt, conversation. People, Nigeria is a state that relies entirely on natural resources, essentially oil and gas. And I had that debate with somebody. Somebody was talking about the airports and stuff, which maybe we'll get into next time. I said, look, Nigeria is built. Everything you see in Nigeria is built on this thing. It minimizes economic activities, which is what other countries expound on. Countries that flourish do not flourish on natural resources.
Uh-huh.
Even Saudi Arabia, Qatar, all these countries that have their natural resource earnings to population, It's just some of these countries are earning in a year on natural resources, they are earning millions per person in their country. They are diversifying, they are doing other things because countries and well-being, just basic economics, is built on economic activities. Nigeria's main this thing is to make sure economic activities does not work. Because they don't have a way of keeping it under locks.
Controlling it.
Once you let the free market reign in Nigeria, the likelihood and almost certainty is that the people that will end up are people like the Igbos. But they don't want that. But generally, you could say, oh, it's not the... And I'll say, look, please then let the free market reign in Nigeria. Just add security and access to transportation. That's all you need. People don't even understand the basics of these things, you know, and they all tie in together. You don't understand the basics of how a WTO, the World Trade Organization, works. This is a cartel, a mafia owned by the United States. This is a mafia owned by the United States, man. This is not It's not playtime. This is where America makes is bread and butter. This is where all these countries make their bread. So all these things matter. If you're not an environment where you're making economic activities flourish, all you're thinking about is this proverbial national cake, which is natural resources, which is oil and gas. That's it. The petrol state. When they say Russia is a petrol state, I say no, it's not. You know, once you see a petrol state, not even Venezuela. The petrol state is Nigeria.
Yeah.
You know, Venezuela might have to some degree because of economic sanctions, right? But you see all these things, and then they go in there and they're talking about, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is where deals are made. This is where countries advanced. You create trade deals. Trade deals are generally binary. They're on these platforms. I don't want to start giving an economic philosophy lecture on this, but this is what makes a country. This is it. This is what makes a country. You even if you want to produce everything in your country, you're going to need trade, both internally and externally. It doesn't matter. If you want to advance in this world, you're going to need trade. Trade is all these guys that talk about what they call them. All these people that talk about self-sufficient policies. Oh, China, all these countries. Look, if you want to advance, you need to be self-sufficient. Why? Because you need to have something that people want. And if all you have is natural resources in terms of oil and gas, you have something that people don't care about. They're not going to buy it. Mm-hmm. It's like they know you have to sell it anyway.
Anyway,
what else
yeah.
do you have?
Yeah,
you don't have any. You don't matter to that degree. Mm-hmm. You know. Maybe there are some titans in their country, heads of Shell and this thing, that want a larger slice of the Nigerian oil pie, for instance. Mm-hmm. But by and large, a big trading countries, the French, where you're buying the Richard Mille. Swiss and French watch. We are buying or Switzerland or an America or China is not bogged about you to that degree. It's just not. We're going to get oil. What do they want? Natural resources. Mm-hmm. What else do you have? That's all you have. You don't have economic activities.
I mean,
to
we
trade
need
with.
Them much more than they need us.
Yeah. You know, so yeah, and then you go there. You don't. You know. You're just sitting down and. Mm-hmm. You make all these excuses and you say it's this first time and it's this and it's that. And it's like, okay, that's fine. It doesn't matter, right? You're not building,
unless,
for the future.
Until you come up with a vision for creating a dynamic economy, really. You are forgettable in that gathering and you are irrelevant in that gathering.
I mean, if you have a good speech, if you have good talk, if you go in there and you say
the Kenyan president spoke well, the South African delegation was, remarkable and so on. But Nigeria should be, Nigeria should be.
Ought. It's not even ought.
Should stand
ought is,
yeah,
if should. Ought. If ought should.
Yeah.
I don't follow. Yeah. There's nothing that should happen. Mm-hmm. I tell my children. There's nothing that should happen. Nothing has to happen.
Yeah.
My oldest would say, you always say the world is not fair.
Yes.
Yes. World is not fair. That's the way life works,
that's
man.
That's right. That's
She's
right.
sitting down telling me what Nigeria should be based on what?
Yeah.
Based on, it's like the guy is telling me about evidence. Well, if there are so many evidence, then there's no evidence. If there's, like, we're talking about all the videos, the recordings, the testimonies of people who took money to vote in a certain way to influence the elections. And then people will come out and be like, well, we can't prove it. Yeah. It's the same way. Like sit down and you say, if you sit down and you say, hey, Nigeria ought, why? Based on what? What are you going to, just on size, you have a country that is not even safe. Forget about power.
Yeah.
Forget about travel infrastructure. It's not even
Forget
safe. Like
road,
if somebody's waking up now and you want to go for summer vacation and you're like, you want to go to Nigeria. Even your people in Nigeria are like, please don't come.
Ask you not to come. Yeah.
they're literally begging you and calling family meetings that you shouldn't even come.
You shouldn't come.
Your own people.
It's not safe. Yeah.
So in what way does trade work in this kind of scenario? And even in the best of, even in maybe 20 years ago that you could move around a lot better, you still had all the structural problems. You had power, you had transportation network problems. Yes, you have a young population that keeps growing. You have a somewhat decent educated base of people that you could rely on to some degree. But, it doesn't, these things don't work. I sit there, I'm like, just the simple basics of how economics work is something that is just simple economic philosophy of how things work. It's something that Nigerians and even those ones that come on TV that have like, outside of some of the really good ones like Okonjo-Iweala, those ones that come on TV and tell you the economic professors, I see them on TV. I tell you, man, Tinubu did a great job, man. I'm like, what are you talking? Oh yeah, man. You know what? Ready for trade? And I'm like, this guy is a professor? Really?
Boy, I tell you something.
I know professors are boring, but make sense.
Professors are boring.
Even if the professor is boring, it can make sense. Okay, this guy is boring, but he's making sense. Yeah. But it's like, what's this guy talking about, man? Mm-hmm. You know, so. It really, because that's where you know who is doing what. You look, you go into that video and you take a look around and you see the people there. You try and look at the back rooms, the titans of industry, the Jamie Dimons, the head of the this thing Bank of China that is there. The China Investment Bank, biggest or the second biggest bank in the world. These are the kind of people you're sitting down with. And they're talking of how to structure deals, how to make trade, what to trade for. Oh, what they call this guy, Tim Cook of Apple.
Oh.
And you could now, Kenya or Rwanda can be talking about how they make laptops and how they could alleviate some of the components of making maybe Apple iPhones, because iPhones are made from 47 different countries, and each order is a massive thing for the companies in your country. That's how trade works. You now have a base. You have companies that can trade with those companies and make their production costs less
cheaper. Yeah,
and they can trade with you to make your own production listing value also less and now higher.
Mm-hmm.
You're both increasing your
value.
I don't know. I don't even want to get into like this. Just basic stuff.
Yeah, anyway. that's like we've actually veered into a totally different.
Well, it's annoying because people come inside and then they gaslight us. They tell the Nigerian, well, you know, people wanted to sit in the booth to do say what? What do you want to say?
That's the thing. You know, in Nigeria, I remember years ago I had. When Obama was president and Obama visited Ghana and a few other African countries and clearly snubbed Nigeria. And a Nigerian minister at the time made the statement that he saw Obama and Obama held him by the shoulder and said, Mr. Minister, I'm going to visit your country. So here was America snubbing you, right? And you are reporting that a president who could have been almost your son held you by the shoulder and said, you know, I will visit your country, which was a way of infantilizing you, actually. It's what a good diplomat does, you know, to sort of stab you, but, you know, pat you, you know, sort of rub
Macron,
your back.
Macron is still like 45, I think.
Yes. Yes. Like he could be the son of any now.
Shea Tinubu is she's like 40, right? She's like she's not the first, second, or third of 40.
So we have this you know, as you rightly pointed out, this whole thing about people wanted to meet with the
president. Yeah, what Tinubu said there was like, the world cannot ignore. I'm talking about the world cannot. Yeah, they can.
Yeah,
yeah, they and they will. Really. And yeah, they'll keep yeah, it like
and
it.
They, and in a lot of ways, they have. I mean, look at the emptying of the US and European embassies, basically. Last year, they asked their staff and nationals to leave Nigeria because Nigeria was unstable and they feared that there was going to be a major terrorist attack in Nigeria.
I suspect that's why there are reasons for suspending, because those that know America has a visa lottery program, which I think is terrible. I think you should immigrate to America based on skills like Canada and other places. But that's neither here nor there. They suspend some countries because they migrate too many people. China, India, Mexico, these countries. Nigeria is one of them. But I think that's one reason they were happy to suspend that with Nigeria, because they would rather have the more intelligent, they would rather walk within their broken system in America, and then get the more intelligent Nigerians to move over for school and other things than get visa lottery people.
Which is what is happening increasingly that you find some really sharp young Nigerian talent, moving to America. And so, and that's, these are countries that think about their benefit, and we have to be attentive to conversations going on in the world. Just a few days ago, a major Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, came out to support a proposal which Trump has put forward already, that America should seize the birthright to citizenship. That sort of thing has impact on countries, countries in Africa, Nigerians and so on, because a European and most Asians can come in and out of America without a visa, just like Americans can travel to many countries in the world without visas and so on. So, and ultimately, it's Nigerians who do paternity or maternity tourism, in the same way we do health tourism. So we have to know that the world is continuing to think of clean energy, alternative sources of energy. The world is thinking of how do we secure our spaces. And so if we continue to muck around and to steal the little we earn from oil and create massive insecurity in our countries, there will come a time when the oil, big oil corporations, a lot of them have pulled out and sold their assets to Nigerians who are struggling with those assets because of, again, the violence and the insecurities and so on in our system.
Well, that's true. A lot of those companies have pulled out.
Yeah, there may come a time when we produce our oil and essentially the world will say to us, drink it if you wish, we don't care, So, and mucking around and holding the kind of elections that INEC held in February, it's an occasion, one of those, one of those events that propel Nigeria in the direction of becoming or sustaining its status as a pariah state, but I think we should leave it there. It's been quite a brisk and invigorating conversation, and we'll come back to you, our very treasured followers, in a few days. So thank you very much for joining us. And again, on behalf of my co-host, Emeka Onyeagwa, we hope that you are going to join us again shortly. Good.
All right.
Good day.